Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio. If you're listening to this broadcast on medium or shortwave in Europe or America, then this announcement is for you. As of July 1st, our programs will no longer be broadcast in these areas and on these frequencies. But they will still be available via satellite, on the internet, on demand and in podcast, and on local radio stations that rebroadcast them. For details, visit our website at vaticanradio.va.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up today,
we'll be speaking to scripture scholar, Archbishop of Brisbane, Mark Coleridge, who explains to us the meaning of the pallium he received on this solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul. As Westminster Abbey Choir performs in St. Peter's Basilica, we take a look at this abbey's sacred space in terms of music and ecumenism. As news.va celebrates its first birthday, Archbishop Claudio Celli launches Portuguese. But first, we join Emma McCarthy as she reports on Pope Benedict XVI's mourning in St. Peter's Basilica on the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul.
Despite their human differences and the fact that they did not always immediately agree on everything, St. Peter and St. Paul show us a new way of being brothers because they lived according to the gospel. This, in Pope Benedict XVI's words, is the fundamental message of their solemnity. The Pope's focus on communion and brotherhood in his homily during Mass Friday morning took on particular emphasis this year, given the presence not only of a delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople, but also the presence of the choir from Westminster Abbey, their plain chant mingling together with that of the Sistine Chapel choir, enriching the liturgy which took place within the cool marble vaults of St. Peter's Basilica. A liturgy which also saw the Pope bestow the pallium upon 40 metropolitan archbishops before the beginning of Mass.
Insignium potestatis metropolitane, tradimus vobis pallium.
Many of them from English-speaking countries, North America, Pakistan, India, the Philippines, Australia.
Solo la seguita di Gesù conduce alla nuova fraternità.
In his homily, the Holy Father drew attention to the two giant statues of Peter and Paul, which hold vigil over St. Peter's Square. He said, Christian tradition has always considered the saints to be inseparable. Indeed, together they present the whole gospel of Christ. Only by following Jesus does one arrive at this new brotherhood, the importance of which is mirrored in the pursuit of full communion, so earnestly desired by the Ecumenical Patriarch and the Bishop of Rome, as indeed by all Christians.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, celebriamo con gioia.
After Mass, before praying the midday Angelus, Pope Benedict also spoke of how the feast is Roman and universal, as well as ecumenical. Rome, he said, bears inscriptions in her history of the life and glorious death of the humble fisherman of Galilee and the apostle to the Gentiles, whom she has rightly chosen as her protectors. But, he continued, the saints Peter and Paul not only shine in the sky of Rome, but in the hearts of all believers who, enlightened by their teaching and example, worldwide walk the path of faith, hope, and charity. He said, the bestowing of the pallium is also part of this fruitful, spiritual, and missionary itinerary. It highlights the intimate communion of pastors with the successor of Peter.
I extend warm greetings to the Metropolitan Archbishops who received the pallium in this morning's celebration, and to all who have traveled to Rome to accompany them on this joyful day. I assure the new archbishops of my prayers for their pastoral ministry, and I encourage all Christians, after the example of Saints Peter and Paul, to let the light of the gospel shine brightly in their lives. May God bless you all.
And in a special sign of welcome to the delegation from Constantinople, Pope Benedict concluded with a prayer from the East. Praise be to Peter and Paul, these two great lights of the Church, who shine in the firmament of faith. I'm Emer McCarthy.
Buona festa a voi tutti, grazie. Buona festa.
And our thanks there go to Emer McCarthy for bringing us this report on the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul, which also coincides with the day the Pope celebrates 61 years of priestly life. Moving on in the broadcast, we now turn to one of the archbishops to receive the pallium. He's scripture scholar Mark Benedict Coleridge, now Archbishop of Brisbane in Australia, formerly Archbishop of Canberra and Goulburn. I asked him if this was the second time he was to receive the pallium.
Many people have said to me, oh, you're coming back to get a second one. How greedy. But in fact, when I was made the Archbishop of Canberra and Goulburn back in 2006, I was appointed to a see which is called immediately subject to the Holy See. In other words, it's not a metropolitan see, even though it's archiepiscopal, and that's because of its dignity as the capital, having its base in the capital city, even though most of the diocese is rural. So I didn't get a pallium when I was made the Archbishop of Canberra and Goulburn because it's not a metropolitan see, it doesn't have suffragan dioceses. Over the years there's been talk of making Canberra and Goulburn a metropolitan see, but that's never happened and I was never prepared to push it in my years there. So a friend of mine said, well, you can always knit yourself one. But I never knitted myself a pallium.
No, beyond
and this is my first, in fact.
This is your first. And you get it as Archbishop of Brisbane.
As the Archbishop of Brisbane and then the Metropolitan of the State of Queensland. In other words, I have the suffragan sees of Toowoomba, which has been in the news in recent times, and then Rockhampton, Townsville and Cairns. It's an enormous state. With enormous resources. It's one of the two great booming states of Australia at the moment, the two being Western Australia and Queensland, both of which have enormous mineral resources. And in fact, the two Australian archbishops receiving the pallium are the archbishops of Perth and Brisbane. It's where the money is. Get with the strength. So I'll be the Metropolitan Archbishop of Brisbane and therefore with a certain responsibility for the other dioceses of the large and important state of Queensland. But the Metropolitan only intervenes in very specific circumstances, so it's not as if I'm the Archbishop of Queensland. But I do have some responsibility for the other dioceses of Queensland, the suffragans, as they're called.
On a more serious note, you're not going to knit your pallium. You're a scripture scholar. What does this mean, this pallium?
It takes us back to the very core of the mystery that I'm supposed to minister as a bishop. Because something happened between Jesus and here I put on my hat as a biblical scholar. Something happened deeply mysterious between Peter and Jesus at Caesarea Philippi. And the Gospels record it, and the Church has never forgotten it, that Jesus, in some sense, entrusted the Church to Peter. You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my Church. I mean, what those words mean has been much debated through the centuries. But in fact, if you look back across history and with all the tectonic shifts of cultures that have happened and are happening even in this time, because there are tectonic cultural shifts going on now, that in some sense history verifies the promise of Jesus, that the rock of Peter's faith has in fact kept the Church steady and firm through the most massive shifts of culture and the tumults of history. And I have to say, as one who worked here before I was ever a bishop, and seeing the Petrine ministry close up, I think the closer you see it from day to day, the more mysterious the Petrine ministry becomes. So something happened between Jesus and Peter in that fateful encounter between the two of them at Caesarea Philippi in the north of the Holy Land, and this conferred upon Peter a very particular kind of authority which no one in the early church disputed. Certainly not Paul. Paul fought with Peter, but he never, ever disputed the unique authority that Peter bore, nor did he dispute the fact that Peter had received this authority from Christ himself. And the extraordinary thing is that the commissioning of Peter is confirmed beyond Peter's own failures. I mean, Peter denies Jesus three times. But after Peter denies Jesus three times, we're told in the Gospel of John, Jesus three times reconfirms the commissioning. So that in the midst of human frailty, and God knows this is important for any bishop, because, I mean, I bring all my human frailties to the ministry that I'm entrusted with. But in the midst of all those frailties and beyond the sins that those frailties generate, Jesus keeps saying, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, to Peter, but also to me as a bishop. And that's what the pallium means. I mean, the pallium means that I, as the Archbishop of Brisbane, am profoundly in communion with the successor of Peter, the Bishop of Rome. And that really, unless that is true, then my ministry is an empty shell. But it's not just about me as the Archbishop of Brisbane, it's also about the See of Brisbane. The Archdiocese of Brisbane is profoundly in communion with the See of Peter. And this is a communion that only the encounter with the risen Christ can bring about. It's not a human concoction. And that's what I mean when I say that there is something seriously mysterious, I think, about the Petrine ministry. But there is also something seriously mysterious about the kind of communion that is celebrated. When the Pope does something very simple, he simply puts a little white scarf, as it were, woolen band around my neck.
With the crosses on it.
With the black crosses on it. The thing itself is very simple. The gesture is very simple. But the symbolism is profound, and it speaks of the communion which only Jesus can bring about. And the prime guardian of that communion is the Bishop of Rome, the successor of Peter, and that my communion with him and our communion in Brisbane with the See of Peter in Rome is absolutely fundamental.
What does coming to Rome to receive the pallium mean to you?
Coming to Rome in these days is not just the moment of the pallium. It's the whole experience of Rome. And I've been very struck in these days since I've been here how Rome is unique in the experience of the communion of the church and the episcopate. Ecclesiastical Rome, in some sense, is a village culture where you're meeting people at every turn, and there's something very energizing and even exhilarating about that. And yet it is so simple and profoundly human. And yet at the heart of that which is most human, there is a resonance that I think is genuinely divine. And I know of no place on earth that can produce that quite like Rome. So it's not just the experience of the pallium, but the larger human context within which that ceremony is set. And that's the thing I've touched and tasted through these days. And it is very powerful. In a world so often fragmented, there are deep convergences and wonderful human unities in a place like this.
And our thanks there go to the Archbishop of Brisbane in Australia, Mark Benedict Coleridge. Among the two choirs singing in St. Peter's Basilica on Friday was that of Westminster Abbey. Its world-famous choir had been invited to perform there, unusually alongside the Sistine Chapel Choir. To mark this occasion, I thought I'd bring you a conversation with a guest speaker who's familiar with this sacred space, both in terms of music and ecumenism. He's music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Westminster Abbey was founded by a king known as Edward the Confessor. So it was a royal church from the very beginning. And if you walk in, it's that pageant of English history that strikes you with its wealth of monuments and artwork. It's steeped in more than 1,000 years of history. So the beginnings of Westminster Abbey were Catholic, weren't they?
Well, yes, if you go back to the 11th century, that was before the divisions of the Reformation. So, yes, very much in communion with Rome. And the Abbey Church was dedicated to St. Peter, and it's a sign, if you like, of the particular connection, certainly at that time, between the church in London and the church of Rome, that the cathedral was St. Paul's and the Abbey Church in Westminster was dedicated to St. Peter. So you had St. Peter and St. Paul, two great founding saints of Rome.
And there's still a Catholic abbot today.
Well, there is a connection in as much as one of the very last monks to have been a monk of Westminster before the abbey was finally suppressed in the 16th century went into exile and, as a very old man, was part of the community that eventually became Ampleforth Abbey. So, yes, there is that historical connection between Ampleforth and Westminster, but it goes through, obviously, the exile and very difficult times.
Ampleforth is a Benedictine abbey, so the Benedictine legacy lives on in Westminster Abbey in a way, no?
Yes, in fact, a great many of the medieval English cathedrals were monastic foundations. Canterbury was a monastic foundation and Durham, and you can see the cloister where the monks lived and the liturgy, the beautiful liturgy that is so characteristic of English cathedrals goes back to the days when so many of them were monastic foundations. And certainly Westminster Abbey was a Benedictine monastic foundation, and that gave it its particular tradition, the particular flavour of the solemn and formal liturgy.
So it's felt in daily prayer and in hospitality, of course, because the Benedictines have this charism of hospitality, don't they?
They do, yes, yes, that's right.
You've been to Westminster Abbey like I have possibly many times. Is there something you'd particularly like to talk about?
Well, I suppose most of my visits to the Abbey took place during the 6 years when I was working just down the road at Westminster Cathedral, and they were a very obvious ecumenical partner for us on the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, for example, and also on the Feast of St. Edward, because you mentioned the king who founded the Abbey. His shrine is actually there in Westminster Abbey, so we venerate that as the shrine of one of our national saints. And the Feast of St. Edward was an occasion when the clergy of the Abbey, the dean and chapter, used to invite us from Westminster Cathedral to go and celebrate an ecumenical evening prayer with them, and we would venerate the shrine of St. Edward in the course of that evening. So there are many such ecumenical events that I recall being involved with, and some musical events too, because both Westminster Abbey and Westminster Cathedral have very fine professional choirs. And there was a festival that took place around the time of St. Cecilia, the Feast of St. Cecilia, when the three choirs of St. Paul's Cathedral, Westminster Abbey and Westminster Cathedral would come together, and we would rotate from one church to the other, but the choirs would come together, and it was a really amazing sound when you got the three of them together there. So it was a great privilege to be part of that.
What's the music like? I know that a lot of the hymns we sing in church are Anglican hymns, no?
Quite a few of them are, yes, and that's one of the great riches that we've had since the development of the ecumenical movement, that those are things we can very usefully share, and they sing quite a lot of Catholic music as well. Probably wouldn't have happened so much in the past, but this is something that we can and do share.
Catholic music, which goes back to, for example, Gregorian chant or not?
I was thinking more of Renaissance motets and perhaps Latin motets, which they would certainly sing during
evensong.
Probably not going back so far, at least not very often.
There are a lot of kings and queens there, buried there, but there are also famous literary characters, no?
Yes, there's Poets' Corner, all sorts of distinguished people. George Frederick Handel is buried there, has a great monument, and Henry Purcell. Yes, indeed.
So musicians as well as literary figures.
Musicians,
so it's not just Poets' Corner, it should be Musicians' Corner as well, no?
Oh, well, lots of people have their corners. There was a very moving occasion when Cardinal Hume, of course, himself a Benedictine, when he was installed as Archbishop of Westminster, he being a Benedictine, he wanted to go down and have an ecumenical service of evening prayer to which a great many monks were invited. And he prayed there, and he spoke of the chapel where Queen Mary Tudor and Queen Elizabeth I are buried side by side, two sisters who were divided in terms of the church. They belonged to the church they represented, and yet there they are buried together. And he hoped and prayed, indeed, that that might be a sign of future reconciliation between the churches. And this was a very important element of his first day as Archbishop of Westminster. He wanted to make that very public statement in the Abbey.
And our thanks there go, as always, to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian who's currently working as an official at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. Finally, to mark the anniversary of the launch of the Vatican's online news portal, news.va, by Pope Benedict XVI on the eve of Saints Peter and Paul a year ago with a click and a tweet, I thought I'd bring you a brief interview with Archbishop Claudio Celli, who heads the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Archbishop Celli began by making a surprise announcement, the launch of a Portuguese site. Archbishop Claudio Celli, you head the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. A year ago, on the eve of St. Peter's and Paul, you launched the Vatican's online news portal with a click and a tweet. It was actually the Holy Father who launched it. Time to make an assessment. Would you say it's a positive one?
Yes, I still remember that famous day where the Holy Father was really opening and launching such a site. It is already 1 year. I feel that we can give a positive evaluation of such an experience. Today already we have between 10,000 and 15,000 visitors every day. And according to our statistics, today already we have 58% of the people are returning visitors and 41.87% are new visitors. But another thing that really I like to underline is that the visit normally are of 2 minutes, 0.20. And so it means that these visitors are coming exactly to read the news that we are presenting. As you know, ours is an aggregator. And so we are presenting news coming from the Vatican Radio, from the Osservatore Romano, from the Fides also. And so what we are doing is to have in a common place, in a unique place, news coming from different sources, Vatican sources for sure. And so really I would say that we like what we are quite appreciating what is going on. And I think that we are giving a good service to the church and to the people that also not belonging to the Catholic Church are wishing to know our news. News bounded or connected with the Holy See, especially with the Holy Father, but also news related to the church in the world. And so really, I could say the positive experience is really already something that is connected with our news.va. I can announce to you that today, just celebrating the anniversary of the first day, we are going to open the Portuguese Channel. And so in 1 year time, news.va is not only in Italian, but also in English, in French, in Spanish, and in Portuguese. Really, we hope that such an initiative can be favorably accepted by the Catholic community of the Portuguese-speaking countries. And I think that this is positive.
How has Vatican Radio played into this portal, do you think?
As you know, we have two aspects of the Vatican Radio in our portal. As you know, through the portal, you can follow the programs of Vatican Radio. But, as you know, the news published also in the website of the radio and broadcasted by the radio are already present in our portal. And so I would say that the main origin of the news are coming from the Vatican Radio. And this is also, I think, a positive aspect of the deep collaboration that my Pontifical Council, the Council for Social Communications, and Vatican Radio, Osservatore Romano, also the Television Center of the Vatican, and Fides Agency. We are doing a good collaboration together. And this is also for myself, according to myself, is positive.
And you were listening there to Archbishop Claudio Celli, who heads the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.
If you're listening to this broadcast on medium or shortwave in Europe or America, then this announcement is for you. As of July 1st, our programs will no longer be broadcast in these areas and on these frequencies. But they will still be available via satellite, on the internet, on demand and in podcast, and on local radio stations that rebroadcast them. For details, visit our website at vaticanradio.va.